Tuesday
McGrath,
morning show on 10 past WGTD. 8. I'm Gregory Berg.
Support for the morning show comes from Carthage College, where students can conduct NASA research, produce an original play, or join an in-house marketing agency as early as their freshman year. More information available at carthage.edu.
And we welcome you to the Thursday morning show on WGTD. I'm Gregory Berg. We have an all-music program planned today, and for part one, I'm very excited to reconnect with Maestro Pasquale Lorino, who is the music director of the Racine Symphony Orchestra and will be conducting them for their upcoming concert this Sunday afternoon, April 18th at 3 o'clock at the University of Wisconsin Parkside. For anyone who wants to watch this concert and enjoy the music making, you don't go to Parkside. There'll be no live audience present, but via the live stream that has been arranged, you can enjoy the Racine Symphony's performance of music of Avril Pärt and Benjamin Britten and Camille Saint-Saëns. And joining us is not only Maestro Lorino, but also Nolan Borner, who is the most recent winner of the Young Artists Competition for the Racine Symphony, who will be playing the Saint-Saëns Cello Concerto No. 1 in A minor. And Nolan joins us as well to talk about this weekend's concert. So, a warm welcome to both of you to the morning show. Good to have you here.
Pleasure to be here. Thanks, Greg.
Thanks for having me on.
You bet. Maestro, before we talk specifically about this concert, maybe you could just kind of remind our listeners about what this past season, which is about to conclude, has been like for you and the symphony as you have endeavored to move ahead within the restrictions necessitated by the COVID-19 pandemic.
Well, of course, it's been a challenge for artistic organizations not to have the ability to perform in our enclosed space for an audience. It's presented challenges, but it's also presented opportunities. And we've been delighted to be able to reconstitute this season, first with a video presentation of the Vivaldi seasons, which we've been able to distribute in each of the seasons of the year, just finishing the last of them spring of just last week. And then Smattered, it's been a chance for me personally and for our membership to play some chamber music that we ordinarily wouldn't be able to present on our concerts. So this chance to to play in a more intimate environment is a great opportunity. Playing and performing a video is very different than the live stream, and surprisingly, we find the live stream experience to really be very much like the live concert experience, knowing that there are ears on the other end. In fact, it's enabled us to reach out to audience members that might not be able to come to our concerts personally.
I'm also curious, how much have you been in touch with colleagues, with counterparts at other orchestras across the country? I am guessing quite a lot that many of you are, in a sense, not only commiserating, but also freely sharing ideas on how best to move forward through this difficult period.
Indeed, we're having to make it up as we go along, and certainly the input of our colleagues, and sometimes it is commiserating, and sometimes it's grousing, and all of the above when it comes to sharing this common experience. This is something that touches each and every one of us worldwide, and the arts organization has its unique challenges, but I also think its unique responsibility, because I've always felt that music serves a cathartic purpose, and there is probably no more important time for that than this particular pandemic.
Nolan, before we find out a little more about your specific life as a cellist and this work you're going to be playing with the symphony, maybe you could just say something in general about what life has been like for you as a musician during this COVID-19 pandemic, and specifically at Prairie School, where you are a sophomore. How has life changed for you, and how have you still managed to make music during this difficult period?
Well, it definitely has been difficult. Lots of competitions and in-person concerts got canceled at the start, but now the world has been shifting into learning how the virus is working. So things are opening up again, and I get to play with people I played with before the pandemic. So that's exciting. And the school has pretty much been unchanged. We're in person, just socially distanced and wearing masks. So it's good that we're in person. I enjoy that. So it's not too different. Smaller class sizes, though. Hmm.
Tell us a little bit, Nolan, about when you first became attracted to the cello. What were the circumstances under which you first began to play this particular instrument?
It all started in second grade. I got an offer, well, everyone in second grade got an offer to play an instrument, and I went to try them out, and I tried the violin and the cello. The violin, I thought, hurt my shoulder. I probably wasn't holding it right. But then I tried the cello, and I felt like a perfect fit. So I went with the cello and stuck with it.
Very good. Who have you studied with over the years?
I studied with first Martha Vito, and now I study with Scott Cook in Milwaukee.
Very good. And it sounds like, from what I've read, that you are busy playing at Prairie, but also doing some playing in Milwaukee as well. What groups do you perform with?
I perform with the MISO group, Milwaukee Youth Symphony Orchestra, in the Senior Symphony, as well as their chamber orchestra.
Very good. So Maestro Lorino, tell us about this young artists competition. We've interviewed winners over the years, so at least some of our listeners have some acquaintance with it, but particularly for the sake of those that don't, explain what this competition is all about.
Well, the competition, I think, is a vitally important component in our season. It is a chance to showcase our local talent. It is available for those, obviously, in the Racine Kenosha communities, as well as those students who have some connection with the Racine Symphony in terms of perhaps studying with members of the orchestra. So we can find the applications to that group of individuals, but it has been certainly encouraging for me over the years to see how each and every year we get advancements in terms of how these young people have been able to prepare themselves, and it gives us at season end hope for the future. Hmm.
So tell our listeners about what you think sealed the deal for Nolan Borner's victory in the most recent Young Artist Competition. What was distinctive about his playing?
Well, I think that with any competition, we start with the nuts and bolts. I mean, are you playing the rhythm and pitches correctly? That needs to be sort of a non-starter going in. And so that level of preparation to be sure that you're doing justice to what is on the page is fundamental. And given that creates a good short list of talent that's there. But then you need to get beyond that. You need to have interpretive skills, communicative skills that really bring the music forth. And I think that Nolan has been one that gets beyond the notes and is able to show his own creative personality. And that really was the thing that put him over the top with the other applicants that we saw.
So, Nolan, first of all, what is it like to go into a competition? And what kind of a competitor are you? Just take us inside the experience of competitions of various types and where the stakes sometimes can be very, very high. What does that feel like? What kind of experience is it for you?
Well, pretty much every competition I've taken part of has been a concerto competition. And the competition between other competitors is very high in most of the ones that I've done. So that just bumps up the stress level, but you got to stay calm and just know that you're doing the best you can with your piece. And hopefully by the time you take part in the competition, you have the piece where you want it to be, then you're confident. And usually when I get to the competition, I'm no fun in games. Right when I'm at the competition, it's game mode.
Well, it sounds like you know something about that and keeping your cool and presenting yourself at your very, very best. Tell us about your own experience with this particular work, the lovely Cello Concerto No. 1 of French composer Camille Saint-Saëns. When did you first begin studying this piece?
Well, this particular piece I started a couple of years ago. I played the first movement, I don't know how long ago, it might have been 2 years ago. Then I took a break from the piece, and then about a year ago, I played the second and third movement. And then now I just brought it back a couple months ago to polish it up. And I'm like, hey, this would be a great piece for a competition season. And there you go. I played it for competitions. And I think I really connected with the piece over the years. And I think it exhibits my skill level and my musicality.
Very good. Maestro Lorino, tell us more about this work and what you think makes it a really distinctive part of the cello repertoire.
Well, I love concertos that start right off the bat. You know, we have in the repertoire examples from the classical and certainly from the romantic period, very extended orchestral introductions. And you do feel for the soloist that has to wait through all of that before they come in. This concerto starts with the bang. There's a single forte chord for the orchestra, and boom, the cellist is in and playing. It is one, Saint-Saëns had a great gift for melody. There are beautiful melodies contained within this concerto. I should say that oftentimes, certainly at a student level, this concerto is oftentimes cut up into sections that allow a young soloist to sort of highlight the hit list of the piece. Nolan will be playing the entire concerto on this concert, which is a great thing for him to be able to do and us to be able to perform with him. The other, and this was very a happenstance because we had, of course, planned the first part of this concert before we knew that Nolan would be the soloist and playing this concerto. But starting with the first work on the program of Evo Perth, the Cantos for Benjamin Britten, this is a long extended recitation in the key of A minor. There are all descending lines in A minor. And so this is how the concert starts. Of course, the middle work on the program is a piece by Benjamin Britten, someone that Perth respected a great deal, and that led to his tributing piece. And then we have the Saint-Saëns in the same key of A minor, but now as different as can be, starting out very, very briskly, doing that same descending run that we heard at the very beginning of the concert. So it's a nice bookend of the key. It works extremely well, and I'm very excited to present it.
That just was meant to be from the sounds of it. That's terrific.
So it seems.
I should think that putting together a work like this that is so deeply romantic presents some interesting challenges as well as wonderful opportunities. I mean, but it seems like it's not exactly the same as putting together a cello concerto by Haydn or something where it's a little more straightforward, not any less lovely, but just a little more straightforward versus the give and take and ebb and flow that is part of romantic music making. So what kind of challenge does that present when it comes to this particular work and putting it together with this soloist?
Well, interesting that you should bring up Haydn, because we did, in fact, in the fall, have our young artist in residence, I should say, who was also a cellist, play the Haydn first concerto. So this has been our year for cello concertos with the Racine Symphony. But the differences, obviously, between collaborating with a classical piece of music, which does it, is presented a little bit more objectively than the romantic works, which have certainly much more a give and take. Working that out and breathing together and feeling this ebb and flow, which is necessary in romantic expression, will be a part of the process this week as we work with Nolan. I look forward to Lloyd. We heard him play initially earlier on in the year. It will be lovely to collaborate, and things are affected by the environment you're in when you start playing with other musicians. Your own perspective changes and maybe approach is modified. Certainly. One of the reasons that this concerto competition is so important is that for young people and for most soloists, we have our opportunities to play these works are confined to playing with a piano accompaniment, an orchestral reduction with the piano. To have a chance to play with an orchestra, which has a very different response, is really so important to a deeper understanding of the role of soloist orchestra and how these pieces were meant to sound. Mm-hmm.
Nolan, how often have you had the opportunity to play as soloist with an orchestra?
This is my first time as a soloist with an orchestra, so...
Wow.
That's exciting, I think.
Well, and to start out with a work like the Saint-Saëns, that's really something else. Now Maestro Lorino, if Yo-Yo Ma were coming to play with the Racine Symphony, I'm sort of guessing that Yo-Yo Ma's ideas about how things should go and tempos and so on would probably rule the day, not to say that he isn't a lovely, collaboratively minded artist, but I think you know what I mean. But in this case, with a young man, a sophomore in high school, what is the relationship between you as conductor and Nolan as soloist in terms of making various decisions about how this should go and will go?
Well, yes, clearly your example is right. I would leave it to Yo-Yo after a career as distinguished as his, probably playing many of these works hundreds, if not thousands of times. That level of experience you want to leave alone. And that's true for working with any soloist. These are individuals who have committed years of their lives to study. And although Nolan comes extremely well prepared, he has to know that he is going to be carrying the ball in this area. My role is accompanimental. Now, clearly, because this is a collaborative effort, I will have some things to say. I've played this concerto. I remember playing it when I was younger than Nolan in youth orchestras, accompanying my colleague friends, and it's been a concerto near and dear to my heart over decades. So yes, I do have some things that I perhaps. Will suggest at times if I feel that it might enliven the moment at any time. But my primary responsibility is to make him as comfortable as possible. And I'm delighted that this will be his first time playing a concerto with orchestra, because we want to make that experience as comfortable as possible.
Great. Nolan, what are you anticipating this collaboration being like? And what does it feel like to be suddenly not the one of a number of cellos in the cello section, but the cellist in the spotlight.
It does feel great. It really does. First experience, I'm hoping I get more experiences like this, but I can settle for this one. This is exciting. And I can't wait to run through it with the orchestra. I've done it with piano all the way through, but that's nowhere near the same as with the orchestra and the strings. I think it'll just make the piece 10 times better. And I can't wait to work with everyone and make the best sound and music out.
Nolan, what are your hopes and aspirations for the future?
Good question. I haven't had too much time to think about that, and I still think I have a little more time for that. But I hope to continue with music far into the future in some capacity. I don't know if it'll be my profession or it'll just be like something I do. That's left up for the future, but I do want to continue with music.
Well, I know lots and lots of people are so excited about this and happy for you. And Maestro Lorino, remind our listeners of how they can enjoy the concert that is coming up on Sunday afternoon, April 18th.
Well, this will be a free concert live streamed on YouTube. It will be accessible on YouTube on the Racine Symphony Orchestra channel. Clearly that will get them to the right place. And there is definitely a different feeling. We all watch YouTube videos now on a regular basis, but I think having the chance and knowledge that you're actually watching it live as it's going on adds a little bit different feeling to the experience for both performers and the audience.
Absolutely. So it sounds like a lovely program again, beginning, including music of Avril Peart with his Cantus in Memory of Benjamin Britten and Mr. Britten's Symphony, Simple Symphony, and the Cello Concerto No. 1 of French composer Camille Saint-Saëns with soloist Nolan Borner. Nolan Borner and Maestro Pasquale Lorino, it was wonderful to talk with both of you. We wish you a successful and happy collaboration and a marvelous concert this Sunday afternoon. And thanks for being part of the morning show today.
My pleasure. Thank you, Greg.
Thank you.
And for part two of today's morning show here on WGTD, we are delving into some of the most beautiful music ever composed, and in particular, some of the most beautiful and striking music ever composed for the piano. Specifically, the three piano concertos of Russian composer Sergei Rachmaninoff. And I am really delighted to be able to speak in this portion of the morning show with a colleague from the Carthage Music Faculty, Dr. Wael Farouk. Some of you may remember an amazing accomplishment by Dr. Farouk several years ago, in which, in the course of a single evening, Dr. Farouk performed all five piano concertos of Beethoven. It was an extraordinary night. I will never forget it as long as I live. And I suspect most of the people in the audience that night will never forget it either. Well, recently, Dr. Farouk accomplished something comparable. That is, by performing in the space of a single night all three piano concertos of Sergei Rachmaninoff. And it may be three concertos rather than five, but these are three lengthy concertos and among the most taxing and challenging of the romantic repertoire. So it's a sort of a different mountain in many ways, just as high, maybe even higher than that earlier summit. And the performance has already occurred, and it was recorded and is going to begin streaming, that is being shared with the public, beginning this Saturday, the 17th of April. So we have Dr. Farouk with us for the next few minutes to talk about the experience of tackling these three concertos and to play them all in the space of a single evening. And so I'm excited for this opportunity. And Dr. Wael Farouk, we welcome you back to the morning show.
Well, thank you so much for this wonderful introduction. And you always very kind and very supportive, and I appreciate your amazing words. It means a lot coming to you. Thank you.
So this really is something else. Let's first just talk just briefly about the earlier occasion that I mentioned in the introduction, this night that you performed all five Beethoven piano concertos in the space of a single evening, something that very, very few pianists have managed to do. How soon after you finished that Beethoven experience were you already thinking about a sort of comparable challenge? Or for a long time, have you thought about the possibility of doing a similar thing with the Rachmaninoff concertos?
That's a great question. Actually, not that much after. I think it was while rehearsing the Beethoven that both the conductor and I, Kirk Muspratt, we toyed with the idea of doing something similar, which is the Rachmaninoff. And I am always teasing him, saying, never been happier to find another musician who's even crazier than I am, to find the conductor who agrees to take on these, you know, really, really crazy projects. So with the Beethoven, his initial idea was only to do three first. And I said, well, since we are more than halfway, why don't we do all five? And he's, you know, made the math, worked out the logistics, because, you know, it's one thing if you are a solo performer and you're doing one long recital, but if the work involves 60 or 70 or 80 other musicians with you and all the logistics, I cannot even imagine how much work had to be done to work out all the details. So really almost right through the Beethoven journey, we were daydreaming about the Rachmaninoff. Just like with the Rachmaninoff, we are now daydreaming about the Brahms concerti, doing the two of them, or even doing something less common, like doing the two Liszt concerti at the same evening with the two Chopin concerti, you know, contrasting the devilish aspect of Liszt, yet romantic, but with the very lyrical and angelic aspect of Chopin. So, you know, many people say good ideas or great ideas or crazy ideas do just come up. There isn't much preparation for them. However, on the realistic part, this was supposed to take place a little bit earlier, but because of COVID and how much that put delay on everything, we ended up doing it this April. However, I was very thankful and grateful that of all of the concerts that had been canceled around the world, that this particular one found its way to light, and it's done. It's here. Mm.
So in your vast performance experience, I would assume that you have played, not only played all three of the Rachmaninoff concerti, but I would assume multiple times. Can you just kind of summarize what your own personal experience is with these three concerti, and also maybe sketch for us which one came first in your own professional life?
All four Rachmaninoff concerti and Paganini Rhapsody, which is also another work he wrote for the orchestra. He didn't call it a concerto, but it was written with Ballet Russe and Diaghilev in mind as a ballet project. For me, playing all of these works, all of the Rachmaninoff, both solo works and works for orchestra, for piano and orchestra, is very important milestone in my life. Particularly number three is the piece that I don't want to say haunted me for a long time, but is the piece that really drove me to be a pianist and to continue in this path. As you know, I grew up in Egypt, Cairo, Egypt, and I was born with very special hand conditions and eye conditions. But since we're talking about piano, the hand is more relevant. And I was having very difficult times when I was 2.5, right before my third birthday, using my hand, and it is technically a handicap, technically an impairment, that I am not really able to do some simple things like, you know, doing buttons or opening jars or et cetera, et cetera. So my parents were very concerned that I am unable to hold my sippy cups or, you know, hold any of my toys. I was dropping everything. And of course, being a 2.5-year-old, you don't have much logic or patience, so you're fussy a lot, but they don't know really what to do. So taking me to a hand doctor, a hand surgeon, and of course, I'm very grateful for this person who told my parents, do not touch his hands, do not operate on it, do not give him any injections, do not give him, you know, anything unnatural. He's born like that for a reason, and we don't know what that reason is. So, but let him use his hand in something, let him practice his hand. So my dad, on my third birthday, got me a little teeny toy piano, which also very interesting because both my parents are not musical. They come from very different background. But this piano, little toy piano, became my best friend. And long story short, I ended up going to the Cairo Conservatory when I was, you know, short of 8 years old. Also been turned away from the conservatory for the same reason, that my hands are not going to allow me to be a pianist. I am, you know, maybe I have some talent, maybe I have good ear, good pitch, etc., but I am definitely the anti-pianist when it comes to physical endowment. But my dad, you know, begged them to give me a grace period, to give me a chance. If they say I am talented, why don't you let him try his luck, and you know, he's a hard worker, etc., etc. So again, fast forward in a couple of years, on my 12.5 years of age, I got for the first time to hear Rachmaninoff's third piano concerto on a cassette tape, and I remember sitting at home running that piece. It's about 45 minutes, as you know. I could not even blink. I felt like I am frozen in time, witnessing something that is most magical, most remarkable, touching. And only now I realize also how significant it is for such a complicated and lengthy piece, and heavy emotionally, let alone technically, to have a touching and moving impact on a 12-year-old. Something to the genius of Rachmaninoff as well, of how accessible his music and how soulful and how moving really his music is. So I remember the second day almost flying into my teacher's studio, who was, you know, large Russian, well-built man, great pianist, great teacher, a student of Heinrich Neuhaus, who's, you know, also taught Richter and Gilels. And I told him, you know, sir, I have to do that piece. That's all what I am thinking about. You know, that's all what I am dreaming about. That's all what I am possessed with. I have to do that. I have to learn it one day. And of course, he looked at me, you know, feeling sorry for me, saying, well, you poor kid, you'll never get to do that. My hand is, you know, three times the size of yours, and I never conjured the courage or, you know, skill in a way to play it in public. So this is, you know, out of the question. You're going to destroy your hand, you're going to destroy your mind, and et cetera, et cetera. So I worked for the following 3 years like a crazy madman, you know, 15, 16 hours a day working on my technical apparatus, learning the piece, developing, you know, larger hand positions, chords, octaves, and all of the, you know, technical boring terms that you were aware of. And lo and behold, a few years later, I was the first Egyptian to ever perform Rachmaninoff's third piano concerto.
Wow.
So the third to me is an important key point in my life. Then and it's interesting too that it came first before all of them. And then after that, I got to perform the second concerto, and then the first concerto later, the Paganini Rhapsody, and in 2019, I completed the cycle. I gave another Egyptian premiere by performing the fourth piano concerto of Rachmaninoff in Cairo, which, as you know, it is the least played one of all four.
So there is considerable history there, and these works, of course, are so, these first three of the four concertos are so central to the Romantic piano repertoire. What kind of challenge did they represent for you compared to performing all five Beethoven concertos in the space of a single evening? In terms of amount of music, sheer amount of music, I don't think there's a huge difference between them, but I should think maybe just musically, maybe even kind of mentally and emotionally, this perhaps represented something different. Help us understand kind of the scope of this challenge.
Yeah, that's a great question. I would actually argue that I think it is even much more demanding than the Beethoven. It's almost as long as doing all the five. The third concerto alone, as you know, I've been rightly so giving the nickname Mount Everest of the piano literature. And just looking at from pure technical or even amount of notes, I think the third Rachmaninoff concerto easily surpasses the amount of notes in that concerto, easily surpasses the amount of notes of all the Beethoven combined, let alone the complexity of the texture, because, you know, Rachmaninoff was a great conductor and a great pianist himself, and his music is extremely complex, extremely polyphonic in texture, and extremely orchestral, even when he writes for the piano alone. So, I am not usually the one who is interested in counting notes or thinking the numbers of notes, but in this case, I think that will be appropriate. But there are literally hundreds of notes going on every single page, let alone thousands of notes, you know, after 2 hours of playing those pieces. So this is one part. For me, though, I have to say, Rachmaninoff was probably always the closest composer to my heart and to even my hands, ironically. I find him even more pianistic than Chopin for myself. And I am, you know, easily and positively obsessed and inspired by Rachmaninoff, both the man and the musician. And I always wanted to do something like that. I got to perform the third concerto at least 6 or 7 times in my life. And, of course, this is not enough at all, like going to the Louvre and looking at the Mona Lisa, you know, 6 or 7 or 700 times. It's never But so I feel like it was a plus for me, at least, to be familiar with that piece, which is the hardest of the set, and to have played it several times and tested it on the road several times. However, as you exactly mentioned, putting them together is a completely different matter. For technical reasons, for even memory reasons, for, you know, physical reasons, but definitely emotional reasons. The second concerto, the first time I ever got to perform the Rachmaninoff second concerto, it was after one of the most trying periods of my life, I have to say. My daughter was about 2 weeks old, and my mother I just buried my mother literally a week before that piece, after a long battle with pancreatic cancer, and after my mom was stranded on the other half of the world in Egypt back in 2014, things politically for Christians and Coptics were not very good, and even though she was in a very advanced cancerous stage, she was denied even medication, even painkillers. And still being able to come over here to be around when our daughter was born and making this amazing trip, difficult trip, but still being around and having this emotional roller coaster between the beginning of life and the ending of life. And, you know, I was at the hospital with my wife looking at our little baby girl, and yet I'm making funeral arrangements for the first time of my life. And knowing that 10 days later I have to sit down and play Rachmaninoff's second concerto for the first time ever.
Wow.
So that is always, you know, it changed me in a way. So it, of course, it always change the place of that piece in my life. However, going on to the first concerto, this is Rachmaninoff's Opus 1, and you know, he started it when he was perhaps 17 years old, and which is a masterpiece by any means for a 17-year-old to write, you know, incredible piano music and orchestration like that. However, he revised it in 1917, so 20 some year later. He revised it literally while he was hearing gunshots in the street, and because that was right at the dawn of the Bolshevik Revolution. And so it, those three pieces do not only represent something specially for me, but I believe they also represent something big in Rachmaninoff's musical development. The second concerto, as you know, was his comeback, triumphant return after 3 years of drought because of the failure of his first symphony. And he went into therapy, and it's dedicated to his therapist, Dr. Dahl. And then 8 years or so later, when he was embarking on his first American tour, he decided to write this gigantic piece, which is the third piano concerto. And of course, the second performance ever in the States that he played it with, it was none the less than Gustav Mahler. And this is one of the concerts that I always wish, you know, I've been born. however many years later, seeing Rachmaninoff at the piano and Mahler at the podium. So, but by the time we arrive to Rachmaninoff's third piano concerto, he is really at his peak, and he is at his sharpest, you know, craftsmanship, tools and equipments, and he is, you know, he is at his greatest, really at his best. So I feel it was very emotional, very special, in terms of preparation, just like I did with the Beethoven, almost for the previous 30 or 40 days, I had to run all five Beethoven concerto back to back at least twice a day. With the Rachmaninoff, at least the prior month and a half or 2 months, I had to run all three back to back twice or three times a day, however times allowed. So, but you know, that pays off. It's like preparing for a marathon, and you know, if you're running 20 miles, you have to practice for 30 miles, so that 20 miles feel like nothing comparatively. So
in other words, you've had the experience of playing even more than these three concertos, one after another. You have done even more than that in the space of a single day, so that when it came time for this performance, you were able to accomplish it with, we maybe won't say ease, but with more assurance. The performance, was there any audience allowed to be present, or was it simply you and the orchestra?
Right, so because of the COVID restrictions, actually the part of the delay that the concert was should have happened in the fall, but the orchestra in the fall was only allowed to give concerts outside in the open. And of course, this is not a repertoire that you would want to hear outside. So they pushed it to the winter, and now we are doing it inside. And 2 or 3 weeks prior to April 8th, where the live recording and the performance took place, there were no people allowed because they had to comply with the Illinois health regulation. However, I was told a few days before the performance, maybe up till very, very few number of people, maybe 10 or so, can be allowed in the hall, and they would want to restrict it to family members or perhaps a couple of students. So luckily my wife was able to be there. However, I have to say that it was very, very challenging for me, not only playing in an empty hall, because as you know, the sound is very different, but also each member of the orchestra had to sit 6 feet apart from each other.
Wow.
So, and it is a large orchestra, much larger than the ensemble that the Beethoven concertos require. So they were spread over almost two states, right? And getting used to that sound took a little bit of time. But however, everyone just did an incredibly fabulous job.
So how is it that the public can experience this very special night for themselves? Through what means will the recording of this very special performance be made available starting on Saturday?
Right. So the College of DuPage, which is the home for this orchestra, the New Philharmonic, have really invested in hiring professional video and audio team, and to really record it and tape it to the best of the what is possibly available. And right now they're working on editing and having it presented in the most professional final product. And if you go onto the Mac, at the Mac, M-A-C, or, you know, if you go into my website, wyelfarouk.com, you should find links where it will take you to the page of where the streaming will be available. And it is $40 per household. There are some discounted tickets for students. And it is available, as I mentioned, from April 17th to June 15th.
I cannot wait to experience this for myself. And congratulate you on yet another stupendous accomplishment, one of just a long line that have been the hallmark of your long career. Dr. Wael Farouk, and again, this recording of his performance within a single evening of the big three piano concertos of Rachmaninoff becomes available to the public this Saturday. Dr. Farouk, thank you for joining me today on The Morning Show. It was a pleasure to speak with you again. Best wishes to you.
My pleasure. Thank you for having me.
And here is a tantalizing excerpt from the remarkable concert that we have been talking about. A few moments from Rachmaninoff's Piano Concerto No. 3, one of the most monumental masterworks in the piano repertoire. The New Philharmonic is conducted by Kirk Muspratt, and at the keyboard, Dr. Wael Farouk. Tomorrow on The Morning Show, a preview of the next PBS American Experience documentary. It is called American Oz, and it tells the extraordinary story of L. Frank Baum, the author of The Wizard of Oz. That preview coming up tomorrow on The Morning Show. Support for The Morning Show comes from Carthage College, where students can conduct NASA research, produce an original play, or join an in-house marketing agency as early as their freshman year. More information on all that Carthage offers is available at carthage.edu. It's exactly